Welcome to the Round Ball Episode 1. Daniel Severino, Andy Burnell, welcome, lads.
How are you, Hedo?
It's been a few weeks in the making, but we're finally here for our first episode, our first lockdown edition episode, right? So we're pretty excited, yeah?
Very excited.
Very excited, mate. Nice to see you, boys.
I know it's in lockdown, boys, but we're gonna try and do our best to give our viewers all the background on some A-League teams moving forward and all the news from around the world that's been happening. And we're gonna try and have a bit of a laugh along the way as well, right?
Too right, mate.
Perfect. So look, we can't do these shows without some great sponsors. So today's show is brought to you by Mate Internet and Mobile. Choose a provider you could trust like a mate. Search Mate online to find out more. And boys, they've been a big help to us, getting us to where we are at the moment. So we can't thank those guys enough.
They're majorly important, mate. You know, as this journey for us begins, and we're taking everybody with us, and it's going to be fun and entertaining, to say the least.
Well, it's certainly going to be entertaining, right, Seva?
Yeah, mate. No holds barred.
No holds barred. So, boys, what we're going to do is we're going to give our viewers a bit of an insight into what we're going to do throughout the A-League season, and I guess the football season. So let's not just brand ourselves as A-League, as the football season. So we're going to analyse the A-League after each round. We're going to give our points of view on everything, and we're not just going to be nice to everyone and hug everyone and all that. We've got some segments that we'll bring up later, but we're going to give an analysis how we think it's happened. Birch, you're going to give your view. Seva, you're going to give your view. Obviously, played at high levels for both of you, so very accredited in how you can analyse the game moving forward.
Will do, Hedo.
Yeah, brilliant, boys. So we're going to give why subs were made, how they've set up, and just get into the mind of what the coach is trying to do and what certain players are trying to do in certain situations, yeah?
I think it's something that, you know, we need to move into more in depth, you know, and we'll select certain players from teams, from whether it's international football or local football, and really get down to, you know, the in-depth, you know, analysis on the tactical now, so on the technical, you know, parts of their game, and you know, really, you know, looking to give the viewer a real good insight of what it's like to be, you know, on the pitch themselves.
Yeah, and we're going to do it our way as well. So they're all our views. So for people, if you please don't get offended, they're just our views from us and the way we see football. So from what we've done earlier, Seven, no one's really got offended. Everyone's taken us all on board. So we don't think anyone's going to get real upset about how we're going to do stuff moving forward.
No, I don't think so. To be honest, our previous segments, they weren't about us. They were about the people coming on. And Birch will know that self. We obviously let people come on and speak their mind. But in saying, like you know, I believe that we're some sort of a punditry team. And a punditry team, you have to be controversial. You have to be, or else you're not going to be called that. You're not going to be labelled it. And I think people that are out there that think that they are labelled it and don't get controversial at all, I think it's a bit false. So they're going to see a different side to all of us.
Yeah, and it's calling out the stuff that other people aren't calling out as well. Yeah, we can tell everyone they're doing a good job, but sometimes, and Birch, you know that sometimes they're not doing a good job, yeah?
Look, I think the important thing that you know, why we also, you know, put this show together was, you know, it's going to be black or white. You know, there's going to be no middle ground. And, you know, it's, you know, if we need to call out, you know, problems within the game, you know, problems, you know, at a higher level, at whatever levels, we will, you know, because that's the only way you can make the game better in this country. And, you know, whatever the agenda is, you know, you're going to hear some strong opinions on it. If you like it, you like it. If you don't, tough, you're going to get more of it. And, you know, it's a time, you know, in our game here in Australia where, you know, the environment is very delicate at the moment, you know, and it's an opportunity for, you know, everybody in the game to grow, you know, and to try and make this country a great football nation. But it won't become that, you know, if we keep, you know, making mistakes that we have in the past, and, you know, if we keep being blind and deaf, you know, to, you know, expert opinion that can make us better.
Yep. Harsh critic.
Yeah. Very good. Now, boys, we've put together a little segment that we're going to do each week, and I'm going to coin the phrase a Roy Keane-ism, whether or not that's a word or not, but we're going to use. So what we're going to, Roy Keane was getting stuck into David De Gea and Harry Maguire from the fact he wouldn't let them on the bus on the way home and he'd make them get a cab home, so, which is basically a coach killer, right? So we're going to use that saying each week, and we're going to say who's getting a cab home each week, who's not allowed on the bus, so who did the coach killer. But, right, we're also going to give the Jurgen hug. So who gets a hug and who gets the backseat of the bus each week. So basically it is, Who was the coach killer? Who did something that's going to make the coach pull their hair out? But also, who stood out? Who did the one percenters? Who did the team effort and gets the back seat on the bus? And the Jurgen hug. So, obviously, we haven't got one now because there's no football in the A-League. But when it starts, we're going to, all three of us are going to have a crack at that.
Sounds good.
No one gets two-footed. They just get the Roy Keane-ism. So they just get the, they have to buy a cab home. They have to get their cab back to the. Because the team bus, as we all know, is still the best part of being in a team, right?
Yeah,
it's a great lever. I was telling you the story before.
Yes,
about Beckham's first day or first trip in the team bus at Real Madrid, and I was driving him to the training ground, and we were discussing who was you know, where he was going to sit on the bus, and. He was a bit nervous about it, you know, first day, new team, bus full of Galacticos, Real Madrid players, and, you know, he'd been at Man United, he'd earned his rightful seat after a long time there, and no one sat in Beckham's seat at Man United. But the day before, the previous day, I'd organised with Steve McManaman to play a little party joke on him, and Macca was already in the bus as we arrived, no other Real Madrid players there, and Beckham got on the bus, I got on behind him, and... he went to sit down in the second seat of the Real Madrid bus, and Macca says, "That's Ronaldo's." Beckham gets up, sits in the one next to it. "That's where Zidane sits." He gets up, and it just went on. "That's Roberto Carlos's." "That's Raul's." "That's Garcia's." He ended up behind the toilet back of the bus, which was where I told him he'd actually probably end up. And I saw the move, the curtain move at the back of the bus, and Bex was on the phone to me going, "You were right." The dressing room and the bus is always a great leveler, you know, and at all levels, really.
Yeah, so we're gonna use those two now, boys. Sever, I'm gonna ask you this before I get on to Birch. The two big things that happened during, I guess, the transfer window was Messi to PSG and Ronaldo to Manchester United. You and I have had some conversations about that, and your thoughts on that for us?
I think they were two absolutely massive, massive transfers. I think it's almost a case of anything you can do, I can do better. I think the Ronaldo one personally just completely overshadowed the Messi's. Considering how quick it happened, everyone was talking Man City, you know, the Qatari money. And then all of a sudden at the 11th hour, Manchester came in and just swooped for him, which was, you know, it's a lovely deal because it's a return to his home. And I think that because of being Manchester United, I think it overshadowed the Messi one. Like, no one's talking about the Messi one anymore. It's like, it's Ronaldo shirt number and everything like that. And I think the Ronaldo one's going to have a bigger impact. First reason is because the English Premier League is the most watched league in the world. I think there'll be more people. I think even people who normally or who are in France, they watch the French league, they'll be also keeping an eye on the English league, even with or without Ronaldo. I just think that the Ronaldo one is going to have far more impact economically and on the world and like just football followers in general. I think they're both going to absolutely hit 30, 35 goals each a season. And they're both... they're both unbelievable players. You know, it's like I said at the start, it's a case of anything you can do, I can do better. If Messi scores a hat trick, I'm sure Ronaldo will probably try and equal it or score four himself. So I just think it's very exciting, and I think the world of football, especially the EPL, it needed that injection.
Yeah.
And it needed that talking point.
And it looks like, from looking at it, it looks like Fergie stepped in at the last minute too and said, there's no way you're going to Man City. Birch, I'll ask you, with Messi leaving the La Liga, do you think that brings the La Liga back down to a different sort of level again? Or am I looking at it a bit differently?
I think, you know, when you lose Messi from any league, it's a big hit. You know, you're talking about, you know, a very, very, very special talent that has dominated, you know, along with Ronaldo, you know, Spanish football for many years, and you take that quality out of a league. Yeah, it's a massive hit. You know, just to go back to what Seva was saying, you know, just for one second, very, very clever business from PSG and Manchester United, those two signings, you know, both on a marketing level and on a football level. Very, very clever business, and two wonderful players that have 2-3 years left in them. You know, especially, you know, people will question Ronaldo's, you know, age. You know, have a look at him. You know, that's, you do that. You know, only a fool would do that. And he will be a great asset to Manchester United, and as well will Messi be to PSG. I agree. You know, the EPL is it kind of. The Ronaldo signing has stolen a bit of thunder from the PSG one, you know, Messi going there. But really because, you know, several tell you, and I can tell you, when he played in Italy and I played in Spain and now with France. And even if you play in those leagues and the players that play in those leagues, you're always looking at England as well. You know, they're all fascinated with English football. It's amazing. So that in itself is very, very clever business. The fact that Messi is no longer in Spain, yeah, that will hurt. The league, you know, an El Clasico without Messi. Initially, it was without Ronaldo, and I think that league will suffer an audience, you know, to a certain extent. You know, although
it's Virgil, still... I'll interrupt you there. Without Real Madrid getting Mbappe too, does that change that sort of stigma around the La Liga too? Is that the financial side of it now? They're not spending as much money. Is that going to hurt them in the end as well?
Well, I'm not sure, you know, the spending enough money is correct. They had an offer of 200 million rejected.
Yeah.
So, wow. You know, they were prepared to, you know, according to my Real Madrid sources, they got to a certain date that they pulled out of the deal and thought, you know what, we'll wait 6 months and sign him for free.
Right. Getting him free.
They were prepared to go up to 200 million. Okay, so they were prepared to pay big wages, and that would have been recouped quick smart, you know.
So do you think that's because they needed star power too, Birch? Is that a thing, star power, in that you've obviously been in that world? Is that what Real Madrid needed?
I feel Real Madrid are lacking that a little bit now. You know, I look at their side, and, you know, it's a decent side, but it's no different to a Valencia or Sevilla or you know, where's the Zidane? Where's the, you know, the Ronaldo? Where's the Roberto Carlos? Where's the Beckham? Where's the Messi? You know, where's the Luis Suarez? Where's the, you know, where's the Xavi? Where's the Iniesta? You know, I don't see, you know, I see new kids on the block. You know, Varane's gone to Man United. They're, you know, they like to call themselves the greatest team on the planet, and you know what, their record and their trophy cabinet, you know, will align to that. But you know, football is changing rapidly and quickly, and the money in football is changing a lot, and you know that, you know, from what I'm seeing, you know, they have an okay side, you know, but it's you know, I wouldn't, you know, equally Manchester United and PSG have equally as good or way better.
I think far better, Birch.
Yeah.
Is it fair to say, Birch, like every year, you know, for example, you hear the June, July, when there's a Euro, there's a World Cup, oh, man, Real Madrid's into this player. They're going to get, they blow every team out of the water. But the honest truth is, ever since Ronaldo went there back in 2000 and, oh, could it be 12? No. Ever since Ronaldo went to Real Madrid, they pretty much didn't attack three Galacticos every year like they did prior to that. Like, you'd always, like, for example, the Beckhams, the Owens, Luis Figo, Ronaldo. They haven't gone after, maybe they've been bitted out of water. Maybe it's just different money. It's Arab money coming into the world now,
well,
you know?
It's funny you talk about that, because when I was there with Beckham, it was, they had this policy that they'd get, you know, the five Galacticos and pay them a mozza and then have a lot of good young Spanish internationals. But that quite didn't quite work for them. You know, it wasn't till the second or third year that Beckham really won anything. And then they've kind of gone through a different phase where they had Ronaldo, who was the one standout player.
Yeah.
Obviously, they had, you know, other good players.
Yeah, Benzema, of course.
But
they weren't heavy in the transfer window.
Yeah, and those players weren't heavy on Galactico level. You know, when you talk Galactico level, you know, we're talking Messi. So we had the previous Real Madrid guys. Yeah, but we're talking, you know, Messi, Ramos, Ronaldo. You know, this Carlos. Is heavy. This is heavy Galactico stuff. You know, Roberto Carlos. You want a guy that you want to sign, that's going to sell you $200 million worth of shirts within a week or two. Yeah. You know, Ibrahimovic did that at Galaxy.
Yeah.
You know, there's one that people always kind of forget about. There's star power.
Yeah.
You know, and Barcelona made a lot of money from, you know, shirt sales when he was there. But again, that didn't work out. It's you know, the Arab money is changing the whole lot. And from my inside knowledge, you know, and people in Spanish football, they're not liking it, you know, and probably, you know, the Milans and the Juves won't like it either, because these teams have had a monopoly on European football for a long time. You know, they've been the power bases, the big teams. And now these guys come in and they don't care about 100 million or 200 million or, you know, Real Madrid offered 200 million for Mbappe. Yeah. These guys just turn it down.
Said no.
Yeah,
and that's why I was asking Birch. Like, it's a lot of money to turn down. Yeah, like and it's obviously the they don't need the cash, right? And like, it's a lot of cash. That's a lot of money to turn down.
Well, then when you know, for both clubs, it's a big expenditure. But it's Real Madrid in 6 months won't get 1 cent.
Yeah.
Yeah,
get 1 cent, where you could have got 200 million.
PSG could have got 200 mil.
So what?
Well, maybe Mbappe really didn't want to go then. Think of it,
I believe any player, including Mbappe, why wouldn't you want to spend one more season in your home nation at PSG, and have the pleasure of playing alongside Lionel Messi.
And Neymar. Don't leave Neymar, that. That's a front three. Yeah.
So you've got, there's your front three. Mbappe, Messi, and Neymar. Yeah. You're going to walk away.
Yeah. You know, but what about the other shadowing stars, bud? Hey, there's a lot of good players in that squad.
They go and sign the Italian keeper.
And Ramos. Still got Ramos at the back.
Ramos.
It's a complete piss take.
It is. Icardi from Italy. Di Maria. Verratti, all the best in their position.
Yeah, they've kind of got the best of the best. So, you know, they...
Would you call them the Galacticos at the moment? Or would you call Man U?
No, I would call PSG, you know, more like the Galacticos. Good point. Yeah, I reckon I believe they're the Galacticos. And, you know, they will be under a pressure to win the Champions League big time. The French League... I think that's a given, you know.
Yeah, they're going to win that,
They're paying 92 cents.
Yeah. You lose money by punting on them.
They've been brought together to win the champions. And, you know, you would think that with that team, having the best on the park, they are certainly there and thereabouts. But, you know, football at high levels is how do you, over 10 games, you know, differentiate between the Manchester United 11 that they can put out now, and PSG, you know, who wins?
Yeah.
Is it 5-5, 6-4, 7-3? Like, it's too hard to choose, you know, and there's no football brain in the world that has the answers to that.
No,
it's just who performs on the night. Yeah. Like,
I suppose it's what makes football, what makes it, you know, a beautiful thing about it.
It's a good discussion.
The unknown.
Very true. That's good analysis. Very good. I like that.
And we hope the viewers are enjoying, like, this is a perfect analysis, right? The both of you have different points of view, but you've been there and done it. So it all comes back to the same thing. Now, what I want to get you both your opinions on, and Birch, I'll start with you, is the Old Firm derby between Celtic and Rangers happened on the weekend. Yes, Celtic lost, but are we seeing a change in Scottish views on the way Ange Postecoglou is coaching his or managing his team?
Look, I think initially there was a lot of negativity towards it from people in Scotland. But, you know, it's one of those things. It's without, you know, I don't want to sound disrespectful to the people of Scotland or for people in Scotland that are football fans, but it is a form of ignorance, because those of us in the football world, you know, who do know Ange's capabilities and where he's worked and what he's done, you know, and with the backing and endorsement of people like Guardiola and the Citigroup, we know he's a quality manager and he's very worthy of that seat at Celtic. He has already, you know, begun, you know, to change the style of play, very attacking, very high pressing, you know, playing high up, and it's an attractive football. And he's building a squad of players that are able to play within that system. It's not easy. You know,
Birch, sorry to interrupt. Do you remember the 2012 Brisbane Roar team?
Yes, I do.
Where off a goal kick, they literally played backwards to a left or right back, like they were ruthless football, but he had the cattle. Do you think it's the same situation now?
Look, I think he's getting there. You know, it's very, you know, and people, it's too easy to start talking bad, bad or good, positive, negative, over one Old Firm derby as well, you know, because they're games that I've been, you know, to Celtic Park live, you know, and it's I wouldn't say it's a lottery, but you know,
isn't it an emotion as well? The players, you go from, it's a different game. It's a different day, isn't it?
The Celtic Rangers game, I've experienced derbies in England and Spain. The Clasicos, I've played in derbies in England and Spain, but you've seen nothing like this. This is a city that's divided on sectarian lines. You know, this is half a city of Catholics, you know, half a city of Protestants, you know, and there's a lot of hate and there's anger and it's insanity. You know, I went there with my wife and, you know, she was looking around and, you know, there's, you know, hundreds of police horses. You know, you're looking at the Rangers fans locked in a pen that was like, it was like a cockatoo cage, like a bird's cage, an aviary. Yep. And they've got about 1,000 Rangers supporters. That's all that were allowed at the time. So there's 1,000 of them locked in, maybe a quarter of the size of the pitch, locked in a cage. And they're not going in or out until all the Celtic fans are in or out. And it's just madness. You know, there's police fans everywhere. And that night after a Celtic win, we were going to go out for dinner in town with Tommy, and he said, best we not go down to that part of town. There's probably some stabbings. And we ended up in a nice little restaurant near the uni where, you know, the players and Brendan Rodgers used to frequent, a lovely place, and woke up the next morning to news that there'd been 5 stabbings where we had initially planned to kind of go for an evening meal. But it's a different vibe. It's a different atmosphere, one that it's almost undescribable. You have to kind of feel it for yourself. But on a football level, back to the football, Ange will play his style. You know, he'll press high. People will have to work, you know, depending on the position that you have in the side. You know, there'll be a certain amount of work that is required of you. And if you can't put that shift in, if you can't do that, along with all your technical nous and technical ability, Ange will move you on and he'll bring people in that can. Now, will he get the time? Will he be given the time? Because, you know, he will end up, you know, producing good football. But what you have to realise is second in Scotland is a failure.
Failure, that's right.
Yeah.
So you're talking about, you know, a country where coming second is simply...
You can't come second.
No. And you may be forgiven one season, but the second one... You know, 2 in a row, you're gone. Ange knows that as well. you know. But he,
Coach, I'll ask you this, and Seva, join in when you can. Do you think he's won them over by the way he's been talking to the media? He hasn't been taking. He's Ange. He hasn't changed his personality. He's giving the media straight talking answers where he's not beating around the bush. Do you think that's also helped him?
I think so. I really do. That's why I asked Birch before about the whole he seems to be in the same mind frame of when he was at Brisbane Roar. I remember playing against him, and even in training all week, you're set up to try and, you know, like you try and mimic the other team. But, I mean, I remember Theoklitos was, you know, putting the ball down on a goal kick and literally passing the ball backwards to the byline to either a Jade North or even a Pardaloo coming out. And I think that's just ruthless, confident, arrogant. And arrogant doesn't mean bad. Arrogant means that if you're playing in that first 11, you're arrogant. It's actually a plus point. You want to be part of an arrogant team because it reflects all those other things. I just think Ange has got now runs on the board. He had the confidence to bring in the number 10, or no, I think he's number 8 at Celtic. I'm not sure of his name, but the one from Japan.
Yeah,
I'm not sure what number is, but he had the confidence to bring him in as one of his first signings, and he's come up trump. So to answer your question, that Ange is being Ange, 100%. And he's kept to himself. He's going to let football do the talking. Hey, what do you reckon, Birch?
I think he's very clever with his interviews. He's very calm, cool, and very intelligent in a way. He was asked, I think it was before the Dundee match or a match before the Rangers game, you know, if he knew anything about Dundee, or, you know, he'd sent scouts out there or this and that. And he said, it was almost kind of sarcastically said, yeah, they're on the same planet, mate. You know, it's like, yeah. it's almost like the press in Scotland.
Think he's dumb.
Yeah, think he's dumb. Think we're dumb here in Australia. And
don't
give us credit for any football knowledge or nous. You know, there's a lot of people in this country that have done a lot in world football, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Equal to or as much or more than a lot of people in Scotland. So, you know, he's getting respect via his answers. You know, he gives it to them in an intelligent way. And he will come good, and he'll produce football and good football. But he, it's very City like, it's very Guardiola like. You know, he was at a City owned team, you know, Yokohama, and you know whether you know he sometimes will play laterally, you know, as Seva was saying, you know, but do not, you know, in any time be mistaken that if vertically is the first option, he will go vertical.
Yeah, true.
He will play tiki-taka. He will play through the middle, pass, 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 lateral, 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 lateral. But it's only to bring people in to go vertical. But if he can go vertical first, you're going vertical first. Who doesn't? If you don't, you're a dumbass.
Yeah.
Well, you know that season back in when he was at Brisbane Roar, just to give you a statistic or something, Steven Gerrard, he said in an interview many years ago, he goes, if I touch the ball between 80 to 100 times a game, I've been very, very busy. Theoklitos used to touch the ball. Now, remember this, hey, as a goalkeeper, he used to touch the ball over 100 times a game as a goalkeeper. So, in other words, you're talking total possession.
Yep. And what
very unheard of.
Very unheard of. He first tried it out here and probably unseen by other managers here.
But yeah.
If I was playing against that team, he wouldn't get 80 touches.
That's right.
Because I'd have someone chasing him down for fun. And if you can't chase him down, I'll buy someone on the market that can chase him down. You know, so you've got to adjust. And teams in Australia just didn't adjust to Ange football. I'll let Theoklitos have 1,000 touches. Why? Please.
Yeah.
Why? I'm going to have a front three that don't allow him to have 5 touches. The 4 or 5 that he does, he's going to have to kick him out.
Bert, it's exactly what you said. We weren't ruthless enough, okay? Exactly what you're saying, that tactic of literally just going gung-ho, not even giving him 20 touches of the ball. We weren't smart enough, quick enough, ruthless enough to see that, to spot that, and to act.
No, they just didn't like Ange's.
We admired it. We admired
it. Ange plays out of the back. All the other teams, Ange just plays out of the back. And like, you know, well, yeah, he does, because you can only do things in football if you're allowed to do things. So
I remember we tried that, Birch. You know what happened there? they split us so wide apart that straight to Pardaloo turn, and then with that pass from Theoklitos to Pardaloo took out three of our attackers straight away. It's so hard, eh? I know what you're saying, but well, when the team is good, they're good.
So who was marking Pardaloo? Who was coming into Pardaloo?
Yeah, but then you know what I was having? A little chip over the – we'd never seen it before, Birch. That's the only thing. Like, it's very defendable now.
So
he was ahead of his time.
Yeah, I agree. And teams have once you see it for a season, you can then – a lot of coaches go away and go, I can now play against it.
Yeah, that's right.
But if you've never seen it before and on the day, I agree. They can split you really, really wide. And if you haven't trained for it or – but, you know, he would do it once to me. The second time, Theoklitos would get one touch, and that touch would be me booting his ass into the stand, and he wouldn't want it again.
It's funny, eh, because second round, everyone played against the 13, 14, like they played 13, 14 games, you know, against every team. The second round, people starting to wisen up a bit, and their touches and that started to go, the possession started to drop a bit.
And
but the first round...
And they start doing to Ange what he does to them, you know. His front three are expected to go on pressure. To pressure.
Yeah, that's right.
The pressure. Yeah. And after a while, you know, if you have and you work on, you know, high pressure with athletes, players that are athletes that are capable of pressuring the right way, because I saw the Chinese the other night and 11 of them couldn't pressure the right way. I could have got one sheepdog to give me a better pressuring session than that Chinese 11. But
they were very late, weren't they?
Yeah.
So, Birch, you've perfectly led us into our next thing about that Socceroos game. And Tommy Rogic obviously getting a start under Graham Arnold. And obviously, Ange has worked with him really well and he got his start for the Socceroos. And you're very right. China were very slow, weren't they? Or I was watching a different game. Like, they looked very slow.
I was talking to Ron Smith yesterday, and he agreed. He said, "Birch," he goes, "it wasn't an hour ago that I told my missus the same." And I said, "You got a billion Chinese people, and you can't pick 11. You can't pick a half decent side, you know, seriously." And all the money they're spending,
on
development, money, infrastructure,
naturalizing Brazilians
that are starting. The problem is those Brazilians. They're eating all the dumplings in China. They're starting to look like dumplings because, you know, they didn't even look fit the other day. You know, the Chinese came out in the second half. It was like they'd had a Peking duck each at halftime.
Yeah.
And they couldn't even run. They didn't look interested. They, for a clever nation, that was a dumb football team. You know, the pressurizing of players, you want to move people into certain areas when you pressure, you know, in angles and triangles. And
The body language was off, eh?
There was nothing. Body language was off. You know, look, Australia won 3-0. It was a professional performance. The boys worked hard. But it was open duck season, and it should have been 10 or 11 or 12-0.
Yeah, I think you and I had a conversation after at Birch, and I said the same thing. I thought they should have scored at least 8 to 10 goals. I reckon they left out there.
Yeah, I'm expecting – you expect better from China. You expect – you know, with all the money that's being spent, there's a lot of corruption. You know, I've been talking to a lot of people, and for some reason they can't produce on the pitch, okay, because they can win a lot of gold medals. Yep.
It's a mentality, Birch.
Yeah, the mentality, the whole thing. And it's
wrong.
It really astounds me that, you know, they should have been hit for 10. And I'm looking for China over the past 10, 15 years. Everybody's banging on about the money invested. And I'm looking, this is an upgraded Japan or Korea.
Yeah.
And not. You know, they're going backwards. You know, it's kind of like, I didn't see anything. They looked worse than the side that, you know, when Timmy scored the bicycle with the two goals, they look a worse side than then. They're going backwards. They're naturalizing second, third rate, you know,
Brazilians. They were there backpacking before COVID hit, and then they just got stuck.
One of them lined up for a free kick, like, you know, like Zico or something, and just didn't even hit the target.
Yeah.
$3-4 million a year, and you're not even hitting the target.
Yeah. Boys, I'll ask you, and Sever, I'll ask you this. After watching that game, and I know we've got harder games to come, but confident we can qualify in the top two?
Oh.
Look.
Or I know we've got some away games to some strong teams, but playing, not having to travel back to Australia and playing in Qatar, do you think that gives us a bit of a leg up as well, and we should qualify?
I go Sever.
Oh no, you first, Bert. Yeah.
I believe you know we're good enough to qualify in the top two, but you know we're going to have to be at our best. You know the result, the Oman Japan result. You know, it, all those kind of results that are not expected put a spanner in the works, because the Japanese now are going to want to win every game that's
there. Yeah, and you can't drop a point here or there.
Yeah, so now it forces, you know, teams that you would expect Japan to win that, you know, group, or Australia, if a good team like that, you know, drops points early on, then they're going to be really, like, pressured, you know, and with no other, you know, option but to get max points out of the rest of their game. So it will bring a million different kind of, you know, results and possibilities to the table. We can finish in the top two, but we're going to have to be at our best and more ruthless in front of goal. You know, that should have been 10, 11, 12. You know, there were people lining up. And you know, we were even in attack once. And I mentioned to you today, Hedda, you know, Rogic is running with the ball from 40 yards out. Running. No one's, by the way, no one tackled Rogic in 90, like in the 80 minutes that he was on. Yeah, he didn't get tackled once. Like,
if that was you, Birch,
how can you not tackle the number 10 of the other side once? He would have got tackled in my era. He would have been tackled in the tunnel before he went out. Yeah, he was getting it.
He'd have been calling for a sub.
Yeah. He would hate, you know, people like
he'd hate your name, eh? You'd be a nightmare for him.
Well, so what's the Chinese bloke being told? Where's the six for China? Maybe you're just going to watch this guy play. So he's run from 30, 40 yards, and our wide players running with him towards the goal, because it's open duck season, so all the defenders are retreating, and our wide players, instead of getting wider to open up that back two or three, that there, you know, Mabil's right on his left, you know, like a meter away from him. Get wide. Get wide, and then that right back needs to, or right's enough, needs to make a decision.
Needs to open up.
Yeah. So, and it was just, we've got to get better on those little things. But, you know, look, we can bag all day, but I thought a couple of one of the Aussie goals was fantastic.
Yeah, the last goal they scored, the Mitchell Duke goal, was set up. Ryan Grant got caught on his touchline.
You know what?
Just kick it away.
That was a great move. It was a 1-2, then it got knocked into Rogic. He knocked it wide. It came back in, and that was a beautiful goal. You know, if Argentina or Spain or someone like that scored it, you'd go,
it'd be all over the news.
So, you know what?
Give credit,
credit, you know, and we didn't concede. But we weren't really put under, you know, much pressure. But look, it was, someone said to me, it might have been you as well, Hedda, like, was the pitch really big?
Yeah, it looked massive. That,
like,
was me.
It was like the Aussies had this amazing amount of room. And I just think, I don't think it was more, you know, really, you know, a greater size than any other, you know, pitch.
Massive.
You can have a
certain, and it's very unusual,
Well, like, I'm telling you, I could have gone and played those Aussies with one sheepdog.
Yeah.
Okay, and he wouldn't have let him play out of the back, the one sheepdog.
Well, most of the time we've watched the national team, Birch, we, look, let's be honest, we don't usually dictate the pace or anything. The ball is not really with us.
No, but it was on this
China, we had, that's what I'm saying. So it was very rare for us to see our own team in total control.
It was I said to Ron and Smithy, I said, we looked like Spain or Argentina or Brazil, you know, against them. We looked, you know, like we were passing it around really nice. And could we have been, you know, more lethal up front? Possibly, I still believe, you know, it should have been 7, 8, 9, but that's football sometimes. The possibility.
And I'll also ask you both this: it could be international level, right, where they're not playing with each other all the time, so you know certain combinations aren't ready to go as well, right? But
Yeah, but when it comes to you as an individual, you know the ball's coming to you in front of goal. You got to earn your bread.
And it's what Arnie said after, you know, after the game. He said that he'd focused. They had focused on, you know, just picking the players, you know, that were playing.
Yeah, because there was only Ryan Grant was the only A-League player selected.
Yeah, and the message to the boys was, you know, trying to put people in positions and try and play a style of play that mimicked exactly what they did at their club. So that there was no real change. Just play like you're playing at your club, but you're in green and gold. And tried to work on that combination. So, you know, the international thing about coming in and you know, that's dead and buried all that. You come in, you play for your nation.
Yeah.
You want to be ready. You know, I believe any lack of, you know, preparation or anything like that, you know, should by a long way be superseded.
Correct.
By the heart and passion that you play that match with, you know, playing for your nation. Yeah. And, you know, I saw Australia playing. They looked good. You know, they looked good against a really poor Chinese side, you know.
It was also good to have a good friend of ours, Simon Hill, back on calling the game again. And he hasn't called a football game for a while, so it was good to hear his dulcet tones again.
Look, I think, you know, Simon's quality, you know, and he's shown it before, you know, for many years. He's back in the game now and, you know, a wise choice by 10, you know, smart choice, you know, probably no other choice. So, you know, it had to be, you know, Harps does his business all the time.
Yeah.
You know, he's very eloquent in what he says. You know, there's no problems from my end.
Now, boys, as I said to you, as we said earlier, we're going to do a bit of a analysis on each team. Not a massive analysis. We're just going to pick out a couple of players here and there that we think are to watch throughout each team. And the teams we're going to go through today are Adelaide United and Brisbane Roar. Now, Birch, I'll start with you. You've got a young bloke from Adelaide that you've keeping an eye on or have been keeping an eye on.
I have. I'm going to start there. We'll start with Adelaide, but there's a Brisbane kid as well. They're both Canberra boys. The first one is a left-sided centre-half, George Timofeyev, that's playing for Adelaide this year. And Georgie, about, I think it was maybe three and a half years ago, came through the AIS, and he's actually made a debut in the Bundesliga for Schalke. So he he played for Schalke in the last game of the Bundesliga season. So he's actually
Talking about.
Okay, so he was at the AIS, and when Liverpool came out to play against Liverpool
Melbourne
play?
Victory?
Yes, yeah.
Brisbane Roar, yep.
Brendan Rodgers sent his chief scout to Canberra, Barry Hunter, who was a teammate of mine at Reading. So he was here for a week, and we had a good catch-up, and we went and watched the AIS play via the Australian under-20s, and George was playing for the AIS, and Barry Hunter, chief scout for Liverpool at the time, said, who's that? Straight away, beautiful, cultured left foot, fantastic player. And then, you know, he just said, you know, he was lacking bite, you know, and you know, that real fight in him, but he was a beautiful player. And George went on to sign for Sydney FC. Arnie didn't rate him for whatever reason, let him go. He went to Sydney Olympic, and then he went to Schalke and played fantastic in their B team, and eventually got made a full Bundesliga debut against Eintracht Frankfurt, I think it was. And then he went to Belgium, and then they discovered a problem with his heart. So he had heart surgery.
Wow.
Which is, you know, what a victory that is to come back from that. You know, it's a scary thing where, you know, you've kind of, I'll let George come on the show one day and give you more the specifics of the actual surgery. But, you know, he's a winner. He's come back from that. He joined Adelaide last year. He's an under-20s. Australian, you know, young Socceroo, and I feel someone, you know, that could, you know, has all the quality. There's not a defender in the league that's has his quality on the ball. You know?
So you're expecting big things from him this year.
I'm expecting him to. He's in the side now, in their preseason games or their cup matches. Beautiful left foot. For me, the only thing that I've asked of George when we've been back here, you know, and he's asked me for advice or whatever, I said, you need to get nastier. You're a nice kid, you know, you're a beautiful, you know, you have the ability to play for any club on the planet in terms of ability. you know, but you know, I want you to hurt people in tackles. I want people to fear you. You know, like if you're a defender and you're playing against people that don't fear you, it's game over.
Yeah.
It's game over. Yeah. It's like Lukaku the other night. You know,
yeah.
Like, please, they're just putting a red carpet out for him.
Yeah.
Mate, he would have copped kidney punches the lot. Seriously, like.
So we're gonna keep a good eye on George going forward.
So Georgie's one that I expect to be a key player. For Adelaide this year. And, you know, he kind of gives that nice balance, like Topol Stanley, to the left side of a defensive partnership. And, you know, I expect big things. You know, if he's one that, you know, and we mentioned that we'd talk about people that we believe could become Socceroos or Ollieroos and this, and George is one of them, and I expect him. This is the time where we can talk about a lot of things here, but now you've got to do the work, son. We can pump him up, expect him to be in the side, and you know, make noise.
And we'll be asking a lot of it. We'll get him on, and he can give us how his preseason was and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. And the second boy is Kai Truan, another Canberra lad. I'm kind of going in for Canberra people because nobody else in the country does. So Kai's another fantastic young player that came through the AOS, and he's been up in Brisbane. A young Joey. I think last year he started getting a good run in the side at number six. But I believe so far this in pre-season they're playing him as a centre-half. I've never seen him as a centre-half, so I don't you know what? It'd be wrong for me to judge him in that position.
Yeah,
I know he's a quality number six, you know, in that Grella type mould. Whether, you know...
You think he suits centre-back too, Buck Birch?
You know, I'd like to know his pace over 20 metres before I can comment on that. You know,
And
again, he, he'll kick people, you know, but it's different kicking them in midfield to kicking them at the back. You know, there's certain areas where you've got to be a bit cleverer. You know, the game isn't always about brute force. The game is about being clever.
Yeah.
You know it's, you know, and where he previously was able to do things as a six, you take that 30 yards back or 20 yards back on the pitch, you know, you make one mistake in that back line against quality people, against fast people, you're dead
in the water. They're going to take you down.
Yeah. You know, maybe at this level he can get away with it a bit. You know, you make a mistake at the back against PSG's three up front.
You're in some trouble.
I remember Timmy Cahill. I remember when he first went from Millwall to he had a season at Everton. I said, look, what's the biggest difference? And he goes, the first thing I learned was, that's what Birch was about to say, when you lose the ball, when the team loses the ball, all you think about is you go into defensive mode, because every single team can hurt you within 15 seconds of losing that ball. So imagine what PSG would do to you.
Oh, you know, it's something, it's a message that I tell a lot of the young kids here, you know, value possession, really value it because, you know, they play here in Canberra, for example, NPL, first grade or under 23s, the same as in New South Wales, the NPL. You know, I see some kids do some fantastic things. And then, you know, right at the end, you know, the end product is, you know, it's a terrible pass, 4 yard pass. You've done fantastic and you mess up a 2 yard pass, you know, and you give the ball away. That's part of our coach killer segment.
Yeah.
If you were playing against one of those top teams in Europe, you wouldn't see the ball again for 30, 40 minutes. And they look at them. Oh, yeah, really? Yeah,
well,
really,
Bert, you'd know yourself, all right? The higher you go, the higher in level you go, you play with obviously a higher caliber of players. Everything becomes easier because the ball gets to you quicker. Okay. There's a reason why the best teams in the world or the best league, they all play ABC football, pass, stop, move. Reason being is because if you try to do anything fancy outside that, the opposition will punish you within 10, 15 seconds. So that's why you try and teach these young kids at 16, 17, 18, making the transition into first grade, just play what you see. Because when you eventually get to 21, 22 playing in that, you realize, Jesus Christ, 3 or 4 years ago, I'm trying to play miracle balls when all I had to do was just do the ABCs, because the other team can potentially punish you every time you lose the ball.
It's brilliant you bring that up, because I've asked Beckham and Roy Keane and people like this, you know, what their kind of, you know, goals within the game, you know, within their position, you know, were, you know, for that particular game. And both from Keane and Beckham and people like the Galacticos was to do the basics really, really well and consistently well. You know, yeah, consistently well, do those basics. And
it's a 90-minute game, right?
Yeah, you know, and you know, the messages the kids here are getting sometimes. I'll see a kid, everyone wants to do a trick. First thing, they want to do a trick, and then they want to do a Beckham ball. You can't pass a kid. Here's the truth from Andy. You can't pass a ball 3 meters to your teammate and you're doing a Beckham ball.
Please. So then what happens? Turnover, yeah?
Turnover. Bang. Oh, yeah. Concede, yep. Yeah. Thanks.
You can do that when you're under. You can do that when you're under nines, but when it matters, mate.
You know, it's just it. But again, that's for many shows that we've got ahead. You know, the development, the messages that are going to the young kids. But you're spot on there, Seva. You know, the great players and the great teams, you know, really have a tactical setup that they work on. You know, during preseason. You know, and it's all pretty much real. Basic routine, depending on the coach and manager's philosophy, and it's getting the basics right.
Yeah. Well, I remember watching you, Birch, back in your playing day. You used to win the ball. If you had the slide tackle, you'd get up, you'd take a touch in the right direction, your holding midfielder will come and pick it up for it, and you just let it go, and that's it. You've done your job. Birch has done his ABC job, correct?
Done your job, yeah. And as soon as you've laid it off, where's the striker?
Yeah,
Where is he? There he is.
He's on the ground.
Yeah, I want him. Yeah, he's on the ground.
He gets up.
He's up. He's getting stood on.
Yeah, yeah. it's such a real basic, easy game.
Yeah.
And we complicate it.
We got many good segments to come with those sort of analysis on those sort of things. Now, Seva, from Adelaide, you've got Ben Halloran, who you played with at Gold Coast?
Yeah, I can talk all day about Benny. When I first went to Gold Coast, he was a young boy making the transition from the youth team into the first team, and he had absolutely he killed the youth league just because of his sheer pace. Now, one thing I learned that when I went to England is your body will only let you go or compete at certain levels. Now, Benny Halloran had speed that you can't coach speed. You can't muscle switch fibers, all that. This guy, he could fly. Eh? He could literally fly. And when he got in front of goal, he wasn't always deadly, but you knew, I'm talking about a 17, 18 year old kid. You knew that the moment he got 21, 22 and he presented with more opportunities in front of goal, he would obviously grow a calmer head. Now you're talking about he's a seasoned campaigner now.
Yeah.
He's played in Germany. He's played in the World Cup for Australia. And to add to that, you put all those together and he's such a nice, level-headed kid. He's not one of these guys that will go out and, you know, buy red Nikes and stuff like that and try and stand out in the crowd. He's just all-around good bloke. He's obviously got a lot of confidence now, obviously because of all the games he's played. And I think Adelaide will be turned to him this season to spearhead their attack. I think he's one of the internal captains of the team.
I'm going to add on to that, Seva, because I've got Stephen Mork, who is looks like he's going to be part of that leadership group too, and a few older heads in that team that I think are going to take them. I'd be expecting them to finish in the top, in the finals, ready to go.
I'm going to go out and leave me. I'm going to say top four.
Yeah, top four. Okay.
Yeah,
I've also got another guy from Brisbane, Isaac Power, who's a left back. Played under 17s World Cup. Debuted for the Roar at 16 years old. So just thought I'd throw him in there to have a watch on him throughout the year. So, boys, the A-League's not far around. It's around the corner. So we're gonna analyse another two teams next week. Then also give whatever else has happened around the world, EPL, La Liga, Serie A and all those. We're going to talk about all that. And we've also got a couple of other things to talk about moving forward, about club championship coming in, the women's starting in England and around the world. So we'll talk about all that. So Boys, thanks for today. It was good to get our first episode out of the way.
Thanks, Bert. Thanks, Heddo.
So, boys, we can't do this without our major sponsors. So, MG Active, keeping 7 and 8 shape. Seba, look, my shirt still fits. Look, my shirt still fits. The boys are doing Zoom classes and whatever else. So, we'll tag them on socials. Ignify Legal, Ian and the team at Ignify Legal, Seba. Obviously, we say it every week, but they helped him out when needed as well. So, we can't thank those guys enough.
Yeah, Ian's a legend. Like I said before, he's got me out of something. And, yeah, you need anyone, he's your man.
And Monster Clothing have just come on board. So we've shared some videos on our socials during the week of some, look at Seva. So Monster Clothing have come on board. So check them out on socials. We're doing some stuff moving forward with them, Seva.
Yep. They're a Queensland-based company. And they're very, very good friends of the podcast. And, they'll be sending us some nice gear for us to parade on our socials and on our future podcast.
We're perfect models. Look at us. We've got a head. Yeah. Perfect models, if that's what they want. Now, DS Dipping and Excavations, sponsoring the shows. Bert, you'll love this. He's running with the mantra of best lay in Penrith. So not too sure where he gets that from. But DS Dipping and Excavations, get in contact with Seva. He'll lay some turf for you. Seva, what else do we do? I worked with you, remember? Never again. Yeah. I'm not carrying your turf in again. You can have that.
12-hour day, mate.
And the man behind all this is Jeff Lambert from Sensor Studios. So if you need any live streaming or anything like that, get in contact with Jeff from Sensor Studios because he certainly makes us look, well, half decent. It's still going to struggle to make us all look decent. But, boys, thank you very much, Seva. Birch, I hope you enjoyed it. We'll do another episode next week. So, viewers, I hope you're going to enjoy what we're about. And hit us up on socials if you need anything answered. We'll all get back to you when we can. Cristiano Ronaldo, yeah!